close to the 6'9" swing man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go.
Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, August 11th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two football writers who both are happy to be here, from what I understand, much like you have quarterback Jordan Reed. We got Kyle Maestri.
I'm just happy to be here.
And Mike the Ferdinando.
Thrilled to be here, Adam.
All right, we got a lot to talk about. This is our first show since football 2 days began, and you know, football practice itself. We got a lot to talk about with that. We're going to lead off with a couple of news items. Like we said, Jordan Reed has been in the news for some of his comments that he made at practice. Kyle, why don't you go ahead and break that story down?
Yeah, Jordan Reed's a freshman quarterback that they brought in kind of just to provide some depth. He wasn't a real highly touted recruit or anything. But he's looked pretty bad in practice, to be quite honest. He really hasn't shown much of any capability to do anything out there, and including interview. So when he came off the field and a couple guys wanted a little bit of time, including our own Phil Kegler, you'll hear what he had to say coming up right here.
I'm just happy to be in Florida. I like being around all these guys. It's a lot of team chemistry, and I'm just happy to be here and going to school here.
Has it been a lot of anticipation from the time you signed on to the Gators to finally be able to put on the uniform?
I'm just happy to be a Gator.
Yeah. What was the practice like as far as learning the offense?
I'm just glad to be here learning.
Oh, now you can't let Coach do this to us. He can't hear you anymore. You can give honest answers.
No, I'm just happy to be here. I like being here.
What do you think about the offense?
I mean, obviously a great offense, so I'm just happy to be here, part of it.
When you see Tim Tebow, this quarterback is so good, you know, what does that make you think when you first come in here as a freshman?
That's why I'm so happy to be here, because I get to follow behind Tebow.
How much interaction have you had with Tebow? How close are you guys?
We meet with I'm just happy to be a Gator.
All right, other than the fact that that's ridiculous, what he said and the way he kept repeating it, what do you guys have to say about this?
No, I mean, it's just ridiculous how the coaching staff treats interactions with the media, because how that ended up coming about was Scott Leffler, the new quarterback's coach, like right before he got in, you know, to the huddle of media, just told him to do that. Like, I mean, we don't have audio on Leffler, but said, you know, told him something to that effect, just say this every time, and was apparently, from what I hear from the guys who were interviewing, like, pretty much laughing in the background, like, just being like, oh, this is hilarious.
Really?
Like, yeah, exactly. So it's really just out of control. I mean, I don't think people really understand what it's like to cover football sometimes, and college football, where there's no accountability for the athletes a lot of the times. Like, you can just do that. You can just literally do that with the media, and you're going to have coaches and SIDs and universities protecting you, whereas in the pros, you're, one-on-one in a locker room with guys who are going to rip you if you do stuff like that. You know, you can only be protected so much in the pros.
And it's not like Reed is getting these ridiculous questions.
No,
they were
softballs.
Yeah. They were like, how was practice today?
Right.
Tell us how great Tim Tebow is. It's not like these were, like, hard-hitting questions on his first day of school. Like,
yeah, and they would have been well within their rights to be like, so you haven't hit a receiver in 2 practices. How is that going? You know, like, they didn't ask him any of those questions. They were all, like, just like Mike said, really generic questions. And that's unbelievable if that's the best he can come up with.
How long till they think, you know, till you guys think he starts giving real answers, till they unchain him a little bit?
He completes a pass, possibly.
Well, yeah, this is kind of weird, because usually they come in, like, a little wild, like Chris Rainey, where they're just going to say, like, some crazy stuff at the beginning, and then they kind of, like, they condition them not to, you know,
yeah.
They put them in a room and just shock them every time they say something wrong, until they come up with the generic answers that they want. So it's odd that this is what happened, but it's also even more ridiculous because of all the practices that they have, and there are upwards of 10, I think, before the season starts,
yeah,
to maybe as many as 20, I'm not really sure. But freshmen are only available to the media 3 of those days. 3. And one of them was this day with Jordan Reed.
Wow.
So now we get Jordan Reed 2 more times, maybe 2, you know, where he's available on those 2 days, which means we'll ask for him and they'll tell us no. But even if we got him, it's like, that's how you wasted one of the availability days. And Meyer went as far as to say, when he was speaking to the media with the big crowd around him, something to the effect, I don't have the exact quote, but it's something to the effect of, I can't wait till freshmen aren't available anymore. That may be sooner than you think.
Yeah.
Like, something just really ridiculous. Like, I just can't emphasize this enough to be black.
Well,
like, this is what we deal with when we go out to football practice.
That's true at some schools. I know at Alabama, freshmen aren't available to the media at all. So, like, if you're writing a Julio Jones story last year, like, you probably would have because he was great.
Right.
You have to talk to everyone except Julio Jones.
Wow. That's absurd. Like, but when does Reed, like, break out of this? Like, do you think he wants to get the answers and everything, and that he's just so strictly been told not to that that's just going to work on him?
I mean, I think eventually he has to talk. He's not going to get away with this.
Well, I mean, this can't go on for 4 years, but...
Although I like the idea of that. I like the idea of Jordan Reed saying nothing more than I'm just happy to be here
right.
for 4 years.
Well, first of all, he's not going to be here 4 years because he's going to transfer. Like, he may not ever see the field as a Florida quarterback. I'm dead serious about that. I mean, they got Trey Burton coming in. It's John Brantley's job next year. Everyone knows all of this. And Jordan Reed, quite frankly, is... From what I've seen so far and what he's been rated at, he's not a good quarterback. I'm just going to say that. It literally to the point where he came in, I was like, oh, he's going to throw a pick right here, Defer, and he did. He threw a pick the next play. So,
well, Jordan Reed's most impressive play of the weekend was like a missed on David Bowes where he almost like overthrew him just by a little bit.
I'm excited about when Jordan Reed does transfer and when asked why, you know, he's leaving, he's just, I'm not happy to be here anymore.
I hope it comes full circle like that. I really hope that it goes down like that.
Absolutely.
For the record, I want to call UConn as the transfer destination, like, really early. A week into his career.
Okay. You know what? I know we said we're not going to do Gator guarantees today, but I guarantee you Jordan Reed transfers. I would bet a lot of money on it. If someone... it would be 2-1 the other way.
Wow.
Or it would be 1-2. You know, like, that's how gone Jordan Reed is. There's no chance he stays here for 4 years.
We're not doing Gator guarantees, but that's so far down the line that I feel like
right,
you can't stop that kind of.
It's all right, you'll hear from me. It'll just be you back here next year. I'll be talking about it. So.
All right, anything else on Jordan Reed? Anything else on the media stuff you guys have gotten to practice? You only got to – practice was obviously only open for those 2 days.
Right,
what did you guys – like, what in general? How was the treatment of the media and the public there?
I mean, it was decent while we were out there, I suppose. Today we spent our time for 2 hours in a conference room waiting for people to show up.
Mm, that's fun.
It's really a lot of teamwork out there because the way they do it, they're trying to make you talk to the least amount of people that you can and have, you know, vice versa, the players talk to the least amount of media that they can. So pretty much what they do is practice ends and it's just a wave of players coming off the field. And you probably, the way Deeper described it is, once they make it to the fence, they're free to go. So, like, if no one grabs them in time because you're grabbing other people, if they hit that fence, which leads out of the practice field into the locker room, they're home free. It's
oh,
like
man.
The Cuban refugees hitting the soil. That's a comparison I would make.
Yeah, teamwork becomes essential at this point.
Yeah,
like,
so it's like...
You're calling out players, you're pointing, like, it's a free-for-all.
Right, so it's like, you get, you know, we're just working with our coros, obviously, at the other paper, so it's like... You stay here on this guy. I have to go make sure I get that guy. And it's the point where, like, I really hate walking out of interviews. I hate when people do it.
Yeah.
You have to. There's no other way you can talk to the people you need unless you walk out of interviews from time to time. And it's unfortunate. I don't want to disrespect people like that. But when they're treating us like that, that's what we have to do, you know? So,
what's the media presence in general been like? Like, you get the big time, you know, the ESPN or whatever coming in because Florida's such a big deal?
Funny you should ask, Adam.
Well, the first day, we got, I believe it was Bob Holtzman.
Yes.
And you guys haven't been out to practice, but the media is, like, kind of sectioned off in this one little part of the practice field. There's kind of, like, a line that we're told we should never cross.
It's like a 5x20 box.
Well, anyway, these boundaries don't exist for ESPN.
Right.
They have the free-for-all to go wherever they want. They're down in front of the... First of all, the team practices, not in the practice field in front of everyone where the fans are, but on the practice field on the other end of the field, 100 yards away.
At least 100 yards.
At least 100 yards. So ESPN gets to go to the real practice field, watch practice for real, while we're stuck back in, you know, no man's land.
One of the beat guys had binoculars. I'm not kidding. Like, literally it was like picking off player numbers with binoculars because they're practicing at the complete other end. You know, we get like the third team defense with Chaz Henry throwing picks. Like,
lots of Chaz
in front of us.
Unbelievable.
Deeper and I got extensive scouting report on Chaz Henry, but not so much on, you know, the first team offense or anything like that.
Not on Chaz Henry as a punter, on Chaz Henry as a quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Who will complete a pass this season.
And who also in his past won
a state championship with high school quarterbacks.
Has Chaz Henry guaranteed that he complete a pass, or is that Mike DeFranco?
Oh, this is me. I think the fake pass, the fake punt pass is coming at some point this year. Maybe Georgia. They've been known to do it before.
He throws a nice ball. Don't get me wrong. I was impressed. But it's really win-win for him in practice because either he completes a pass to a receiver and everyone gives him a pat on the back, or he throws an interception, everyone still gives him a pat on the back because they're just trying to get the work in for the other guys. So it really must be a fun job. He can do whatever he wants out there, pretty much.
That is a pretty good job, then. What has the fan reaction been like? Because I know the fans came out those first 2 days. It's 6 in the morning, which is absurd. I just like to throw that out
It's there. Unbelievable how many people are there at 6 in the morning. Like, we're, like, rolling out of bed after having, like, maybe stayed up all night. Like, it's horrible for us. We get there, and there's, like, hundreds of these people here, and they're just raring to go, and I couldn't believe it.
Hundreds is very strong.
200 people?
Okay, I'm going to say no more than 200 people. But even at 200 people, like, what the heck?
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. For a glimpse of, you know, Chaz Henry throwing interceptions to Brandon Beal. Like, that's what you're getting on that first field. So maybe Wandy sneaks in, gets a couple touches.
It's always a good time. All right, let's move on, then. We're going to move on to another topic. Other news that came out of practice, one of the coaches talked about potentially running Joe Hayden in the Wildcat formation that, you know, become really popular over the last couple of years in both college football and the NFL. You guys were there. You've heard the interviews. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Joe's actually a pretty good guy to do this. He played quarterback for 4 years in high school, like, very successfully. I think
did he win a state title?
I think he won two state. I think he won two state titles. I think he even broke some, like, Maryland passing records. So he's actually really well equipped to do this. And it's like Joe said himself, you know, I'm not just a defensive player, like, going to play offense. I'm a quarterback. So I think he's going to do well, actually.
You think this is
in practice?
What?
Or in games?
I think if you bring him in for a couple plays a game, just like you would have used Percy in that position or something. But the difference is Joe can actually throw the football. So when he's rolling out wide, if he throws it, that could add a dimension that you don't get with someone else.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this. Like, is this almost a vote of no confidence in the other receivers and running backs that Joe Hayden is the best guy suited for this rather than any of them?
I mean, I don't think they're going to use it at all. But I think it's like a cute thing you experiment with, kind of like the fake punt in the preseason NFL game that you see, that you know is just not going to make it, like, you know, into the real playbook. Just because, I mean, if for no other reason, why do you want to take your best player out of the game like that? Like, any time Tim Tebow's not taking the snap, you're kind of hurting yourself.
So you really think nothing at all?
No.
So I think he's already in the playbook. They used it last year with Percy.
All right, so he's going to what, take a couple snaps against
Charleston
Southern or something?
I mean,
like
just to something to give a different look every once in a while. Because, I mean, Hayden can play receiver, so you can line it up in like a slot or something. Not that he's going to do that, but just to get him on the field a little bit.
You think this is just to please Hayden? Like, you feel like Hayden was one of those guys who was like, I want to play both sides or anything? Or do you think they brought it to him?
No, I think Urban's just trying to give some people something to think about. I think Hayden, like, sought out offense. But
the story is this. I don't know how true this is, but Urban Meyer said that Joe Hayden threw him a football.
Right.
And this is like straight out of a movie. And, like, he threw it to him so tight and hard. And he was just like, do that again. And he did. And then that's how this was born. Like, this is the story Urban Meyer told us.
It's the rookie or whatever. Throw me another one.
Yeah.
They sit out there till dusk throwing the ball to each other.
So that's the story. I'm not buying any of this. I think it not only will they not use it, I think it doesn't really help them any. So we'll see.
All right, another news. Not actually current Gators, but former Gators. Cornelius Ingram, who sat out all last year with a torn left ACL, recently tore that same ACL while training with the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFL training camp. Obviously a terrible loss for a great guy, and everybody talks about him like he's such a good guy, and you hate to see something like this happen to a guy like him.
Yeah, it's just sad. It had to happen again, you know?
Yeah, Urban Meyer was asked about it today, and he just said that he felt bad. He talked to CI about it, and he also talked to Andy Reid about it. So I guess Andy Reid, in his opinion, was handling the situation very well, treating, you know, CI pretty nicely. So he just thanked him for that, and, you know, whatever else the conversation would entail between the two of them.
It would be an interesting conversation here. All right, let's move on and talk about some other stuff, a little more analysis here from the practices you guys have seen. Let's talk about some of the freshmen. You guys have brought up Andre DeBose and John Bostic. Just start off with, I guess, DeBose, what you guys have seen out of
him. Yeah, he looked pretty good. I mean, he's had some hiccups here and there, but he seems to show the same kind of, like, quickness and elusiveness that coaches want out of him. I don't know if he's Percy Harvin, per se, but he's definitely a good player. He'll definitely contribute this year a lot on offense. He's got lots of quick moves, like lateral quickness.
Yeah, he's real fast. He's shown a couple, you know, big plays already in practice where he just totally lost the guy, broke his ankle. Was it Marquis Anderson? Or?
Yeah, I think it was.
And just totally lost him. And Jordan Reed, of course, missed the throw. But and then
great move by DeBose.
Jordan
Reed was just happy to throw the pass.
Yeah. Right. There was another play, and I think this was against the first team D, where he just ran straight by guys, and Tebow hit him on a fly route. So he's shown the ability to be fast. Urban Meyer was saying, like, he's not quite where, you know, we'd like to see him yet, but he looks good out there, and he'll definitely be a contributor.
Is he big enough, do you think? Like, I know there were some concerns at the charity challenge after, like, his after his hamstring injury, I believe it was, this offseason, whether or not he had enough time to get back in shape.
Yeah, he's not as big as I thought he was originally. He's much smaller in person than he's listed. I'm not sure he's listed at, but I would say he's maybe like 5'10 or 11, 170 pounds, something like that.
Yeah, he's a small guy, but he'll be fine. Whatever. When you're that fast and elusive, you're not going to take that many square hits.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be okay. They're not exactly asking him to run between the tackles. So.
That's true. All right, so let's talk about Bostic. This is your boy, Kyle.
It's unfairly labeled my boy. I don't want to be tied to the successes or failures of John Bostic. But he did go to my high school, and I did know him a little bit, and my brother played basketball with him. But I'm surprised at how good he is, just because Central's football team is really, really bad. It's, like, shocking that they could actually produce, like, a major D1 player. But the coaches have been really all over him, saying how great he's been. And Urban was just, you know, giving him tons of praise today, saying how far along he is for a freshman. And I've just thought, I don't know, I was just kind of shocked, and we'll see what happens. But he's a huge kid. He's got a real, you know, good body made for college football. He's not a guy where you constantly hear them talk about kids where they're like, got to put weight on him, or like, we got to get him in shape. Like, that's not the case with Bostic. Like, he's already ready to go right now. But
like Andre 3000.
Yes, much like Andre 3000. But, oh man, that's bad. Anyway, I don't think he'll crack the rotation, really, just because linebacker is absolutely loaded. It's disgusting the number of like great linebackers or capable linebackers they have on this team.
So do you think he'll see any time, you know, like third quarter, fourth quarter, with the second, third string defense? Do you think that's where he fits?
Yeah, he'll definitely get in that scenario. But I think, like, you know, Spikes didn't play hardly at all his freshman year with Siler, and I think you're going to kind of see the same thing happen here with Bostic, especially because he's also competing with guys like Lorenzo Edwards and stuff, who, you know, are trying to get on the field, Brandon Hicks, guys who are really good and, you know, have a year on them and haven't cracked the rotation yet.
Another freshman linebacker we wanted to talk about, I think you brought him up, deeper, was Jelani Jenkins. What have you seen out of him at practice?
Yeah, a lot of, he's kind of grouped in with Bostic, a lot of Urban Meyer's praise. Just pretty much the same thing. He's showing a lot of stuff for a freshman.
So do you think this is just a thing for the future? Like, will they see time together? Is Bostic an inside guy and Jenkins outside? Is that generally
how? Yeah, so I think they could definitely play together a couple of years down the road.
All right, something to look out for. And then the last freshman guy I'm going to talk about, another receiver, Stephen Alley, who has been a pretty big story. He was the guy who skipped his senior year of high school, or graduated early, and came down. He was a recruit for the class of 2010, and is now, he was the first, like, supposedly the first recruit of the class of 2010 to play. Now he's the last of 2009 or something, whatever like that. So he's down here, he's practicing with the team. Huge kid, only played football, like, organized for 1 year, right?
Yeah, I think he's just turned 18. He's from Canada. He played basketball his whole life growing up, but he's like 6'8", 6'7", 6'8". He can has an unbelievable athletic ability from what the coaches say. He can jump. I'm not sure how great his football skills are at this point, but I guess a heck of a project for the future.
He's a lock for a red shirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no. He's only played 1 year of football. There's no way he can play.
What do they see him projecting as, a wide receiver or a tight end?
They say wide receiver right now, but it's because of his body type. I guess he'd bulk up to be a tight end for sure.
He'd have to learn to block them, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's definitely a long-term project. Yeah, I wouldn't expect to see him on your highlight reel this season.
You were at Friday Night Lights. I guess the story goes, you got offered a scholarship at Friday Night Lights, and then like a week or two later, he's here.
Yeah, that was like the basic story. It didn't break till afterwards, obviously. It wasn't something we were told there. So,
yeah.
Certainly not media, you know, media-friendly, that Friday Night Lights, but yeah. He was there. He's a very impressive big guy. I mean, like, I viewed him more as a project, though, like you guys are talking about. Like, this is not a polished guy. He's all, you know, he's all raw talent and everything. So,
really weird story.
One
of the weirdest stories I've ever heard.
I can't imagine what it must be like for him to go from, like, not playing, like, high school football, really, to, like, playing with Florida, like, the first week of fall practice. That's gotta be crazy.
Yeah, let me just say this could end badly for him, also. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he may never get his footing, you know? I mean, I don't know. We haven't seen anything from him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't quite, you know, develop the way they think he might.
Yeah, I mean, with the receiving corps, though, like, maybe you could argue they need all the help they can get. You know, you don't know what's going to be back next year. They're just looking for as many guys as they can get, I guess. Let's move on to another part of the offense, the running backs. Kyle, you had some stuff you wanted to talk about with Jeff Dempsey and Brandon Jameson.
And Chris Rainey out of the backfield. Just one thing from talking to Kenny Carter that I found interesting. Kenny Carter's the running backs coach. He was just saying how, you know, I was asking him about the I formation a little bit, or the under center package, whatever you want to call it, and if that means, like, you know, a lot of people think that's going to mean more Moody and stuff. And he was pretty quick and, like, to shoot me down, pretty defensive about the whole thing. He was just saying, like, no, absolutely not. Like, that's not the case. Like, Moody isn't ready to go. He's like, you know, when he's healthy, he'll be able to play, but he's not healthy. And he said that, you know, they feel more than comfortable with Dempsey and Rainey running in between the tackles. And he fed me some crap about how the majority of their touchdown runs had come, like, in between the tackles and all that jazz. But, they're obviously not between the tackle runners,
no.
But they can run between the tackles. But it's just,
yeah,
it was
like,
stupid. Like,
you and I could run in between the tackles.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, that's not going to be the primary way you use those guys.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, because I even asked him, like, would you rather get them out in space? He's like, we just want to get them touches any way we can. So, I don't know, it's very noncommittal. But the point he was trying to make is that, like, it's just not just like, okay, we're going to go under center and Moody's going to get the ball. Like, that's not how it's going to work. So, I did believe him. I did find him to be truthful about that. But I didn't necessarily buy the whole, we like Dempsey and Rainey between the tackles thing, though.
Anything they could do to dash the hopes of Emmanuel Moody even further, I think.
The coaches seem to be kind of down. I'm getting really worried about Emmanuel Moody's future at Florida. I don't think it's going to work out. I mean, he's hurt all the time. He's riding the bike in practice every day. Like, he needs to be on the field.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole situation played out really odd. It was like, oh, we could use him for this year that he's going to have to sit out, but we'll bring him in anyway, and then bring in more running backs after that are fast, the kind we like. And the whole thing's just been odd. Then he's had a million injuries, which you got to feel bad for the guy because by all accounts, he's a pretty good dude. And you never like to see a guy, you know, just be ruined by injuries, especially somebody as talented as him. But, you know, he probably made the wrong decision coming to Florida. I think it's safe to say that at this point. Yeah.
And I know everyone wants to run, like, in between the tackles. Like, you always want what you don't have, right? So they want everyone to run the ball between the tackles. But honestly, they don't have to. And
no, they shouldn't.
Like, why should you? Yeah, that's not the offense.
You know who's going to do that, though? Tim Tebow. Like,
okay, good. He's better than whoever they're going to send out there anyway.
Well, I mean, they'll run him between the tackles a little bit, but it's not like they're going to just pound the ball up the middle.
Yeah.
Like, they will use that part of the game. They're going to use the whole field, but it's not like it's a situation where the only way you get to the outside is by bouncing it to the outside. Like, they're obviously going to stick with spreading the field out, letting the guys, you know, run off the edges like they've done really successfully in the past.
Yeah. What was the other thing you were telling me about? Somebody saying Brandon James could see time in the Percy position? That's...
Yeah. Today, somebody asked about the Percy. I hate that it's called the Percy position, by the way. It's like, we can't come up with anything. Like, no other player in the history of football has done what Percy Harvin has done. Therefore, the position is named after him.
I think it does have anyway. I think it's the Z receiver position or something like that.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
No, I mean, yeah, it's got to have a name or at least call it. I don't know. Figure out something.
Yeah.
But there's been other players that have done things similar to Percy Harvin.
Yeah, he's not the only player who's lined up at wide receiver and running back.
Right.
Throw that out there.
Right. So anyway, Myers said that Dempsey and Rainey have been... Or Don Brady, I'm sorry. Dempsey and Brandon James have been getting the work at the Percy position, which to me means Jeff Dempsey. Like, you might as well, like, get another guy in there, like, oh, he's pushing them. Like, they got to compete for time. Nothing's for free. But
no job is safe, guys.
Come on. Brandon James isn't going to go from 20 touches all of last season to the Percy Harvin, like, guy in the offense. I just don't see that happening.
So this is Jeff Dempsey's role to lose.
That's what I think. What do you think?
I kind of agree. I can't see Brandon James like playing a huge role.
I mean, I see him getting more touches this year than he did last year, but I don't see him being a focal point in the offense. I think they love Gems. They're Gems. God,
hybrid.
They love Gems, and they're going to want to feature him as much as they possibly can. Kenny Carter is really raving about him, saying that he does everything that they want. Like he just does every single thing that they ask of their running back. He commits to blocking when he needs to block. He can catch balls out of the backfield. He runs it hard. He's always motivated. He's always working hard. Rainey, not so much. And Meyer kind of alluded to that today, too, saying, you know, he's not really the pass catcher and stuff that can come out and do the type of things that Jeff Dempsey can do. And Kenny Carter said that Rainey's not exactly a great blocker either. So... Randy's the best with the ball in his hands already, getting handed to him, and I guess that's not really what the position calls for there. So,
what does that say for the future of Randy then in this offense this year?
I think he still has a future and stuff, and I mean, if you're going to line up Demps, you know, in the slot or coming across in motion, I suspect Randy will be in the backfield then, you know.
Not
it's just, right, yeah, no, I don't think Rudy or Glissley is going to, or Chris Scott, our boy, is going to slip onto the field, so... I think Rainey will definitely have a big role on the team. I think it's going to be Rainey and Demps. Like,
okay.
Those are going to be the guys, and I think Moody's going to get pushed to the side a little bit.
Even further?
Yeah,
even further.
You may not even see fourth quarter
Moody's
this year.
Let's also point out that the Bows took number four jersey, so it's 2, 3, 4, for those of you keeping score out there.
Huh.
Not it. if you're making t-shirts at home.
I'm sure people aren't.
Or also worn by defensive great Wandy Pierre-Louis.
Defensive great.
I doubt they'll be confused on the field of play, then.
Well, it's not into the offensive and defensive players wearing the same number of stuff, because that bothers me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's horrible. That's horrible. That should never happen.
Do they have more than 100? They don't have more than 100 players on their team.
No.
They might, but they're not scholarship guys.
Yeah. No one has actually played. Should have the same number as someone else who actually played.
Yeah, I couldn't agree.
No, I agree completely. I think this is a good point. You need to take this to somebody who has power.
How? Why even have numbers? Like, how? I'm serious. How is that allowed? What's the point of a number? Is it just for show?
I mean,
like,
for
the fans?
It's for record keeping at that point.
But then that defeats the purpose if you have two of them.
It's ridiculous.
Like, for
general
offensive and defensive statistics,
it's not to sell jerseys because they're in college. Like,
right.
You can say that much.
There's only so many cool numbers we have to double up afterwards. Is that how it is?
I don't understand.
At that point, you got to wonder why the number one jersey, which Janoris Jenkins ended up with, is so, like, prestigious that, like, you know, three people just don't have it.
Well, this goes back. Joe Hayden and Chris, like, both wore number 12, like, in 2006. That bothered me.
Joe Hayden have that number? Well, was Joe Hayden on the...
All right, maybe.
No, Joe Hayden was
okay. It was Brantley and Hayden, and I don't know what it was. Joe Hayden wore number 12, and someone else also had it that year.
It could have been Lee. No, Hayden is junior. What grade is Hayden?
I believe Hayden's freshman
year.
All
right, I'm wrong about Lee, but he definitely wore a duplicate number, and it bothered me.
Okay, fair enough. I think we should probably just leave
okay.
it. So maybe when Tebow was starting, he was 15.
Yeah,
Brantley
sure.
was 12.
Yeah.
Joe Hayden was, but he switched his number to 5.
Okay.
He was definitely 5.
I don't know who it was. This
is a mess. This
is
a disaster.
I didn't this all out.
No, I still think it's, Brantley and Hayden.
Okay.
We can go back and check this
okay.
at a later time.
Far be it from us to check it before we
yeah, no,
we can't
absolutely
predict
not.
This
is a free-flowing conversation.
Brantley and Hayden are actually in the same class, right? Because
right. They could have came in.
Because Brantley redshirted.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's the situation.
I think so, too.
Everybody has solved this debate like 30 seconds ago by like three clicks
yeah,
on the computer. And they're like, yeah, roster says both for 12. All right. Let's move on from that, I guess. Not a whole lot else to talk about the running backs or duplicate jersey numbers. Some injury stuff from the practices. Obviously, probably nothing that serious, but Tratto, I believe you said, was injured. What else we got on the injury report?
Tratto sprained his left ankle / foot. I don't know. Something having to do with his left foot that was fairly vague as it was... conveyed to the media. Ahmad Black was back today in practice. They said Moore and Moody both practiced,
yeah.
I believe,
yeah.
today.
Sparingly, I believe.
Yeah, Carl Moore, of course. And Meyer had a good quote about the injury report also. It's all that deeper to tell.
Stephen Wilkes was also injured. And Meyer was quoted saying, you know, for those of you guys know Stephen Wilkes, right?
Because he was giving the reports like, and Wilkes, you guys know Wilkes, yeah. he's hurt also.
So. People agree, like, from the media, like, yeah, we know Wilkes, yeah.
So, the Book of Bewilderment.
should we mark this down? Like, is this where the story?
Third string pullback.
Anything else from practice stuff? Kyle, you made a point to tell me that there were no snaps taken from under center throughout the entirety of the practices you saw.
I'm just saying. In the open practice, there were no under center snaps taken by anyone other than Chaz Henry, I believe. So
look out for that
yeah.
next year, all right? That's something they're not expecting to see.
But I mean, and the other thing about that is I just don't think they have – Urban Meyer just talked about how important, like, having the right, like, tight end and fullback are, and I just don't think they have the right tight end. Yeah. Have you seen Pride Ward in the 2 days we've been out there?
He runs off the field every day. He's doing something.
I've not seen Pride Ward at all. I just realized this. I've not seen or heard. Wait, I haven't even heard his name.
I haven't seen
the coaches said his name.
No, and I haven't seen him play either. But I pointed him out to you when he was walking off the field the other day.
Right. He is not like taking a snap.
This all seems very amateur because now, like, I don't know if you've seen Pridemore. But,
that's worthy of concern.
The point is that Kyle's right about them never working the understanding stuff during practice. We haven't seen it at all.
So, unless this is some master plan where he's really keeping it deep in the pocket and he's going to bust it out, like, under top secret, you know, orders from Urban Meyer and stuff, I just don't see Adazio, like, putting this into the offense. It's not going to happen. There's just no way it happens.
Who are the other fullbacks on the team? Like, Rick Burgess is like...
I can't tell you. Yeah, you tell me.
I think Stephen Wilkes.
He's injured. Don't worry.
He's injured.
Don't worry about him for a little while.
I don't know.
And tight end-wise, like, Hernandez and
Parks?
Literally the only two tight ends on the roster. And Parks is not blocking anyone. I promise you that. I just don't think they have the personnel to do it. And I don't think they should do it. I don't think they will do it.
Yeah.
So...
Signs point to them not.
After we have a conclusion, though, I just want a spirited apology from whoever side comes
White
out on the wrong end of this whole
thing. Our name and names. That would be one of them.
No, I mean, if it's me, if Bobby and I are wrong, I'll say I was wrong. I'll say it right now. I will say I was wrong if I'm wrong about this.
What's the criteria? If they run it at any point this season or any meaningful point?
No, meaningful point.
Okay. I'm sure they'll be.
Starting to think it's not even going to happen in meaningless games unless Brantley's in. I could see them running it with Brantley a little bit.
I could see them running some sort of Brantley, like maybe Moody's, like, you know,
Brantley Moody combo.
But it's the last 3 minutes of a game. You know, Brantley and Moody in there. All right.
But even Brantley didn't. I mean, he didn't take any either. So unless Chaz comes out, Deeper is right. He completes a couple passes.
Mark it down, guys. Chaz Henry.
How protected is Aaron Hernandez going to be in these practices, by the way? I wonder if you guys saw anything. Because, like, other than, like, Tebow, I feel like he's probably the most important player on the offense right now.
Red jersey? I mean, not really, but maybe they should get him one.
I don't know. I didn't see anything the first 2 days. They weren't hitting yet. They were just kind of touching after, in order to, quote-unquote, bring the player down. But Hernandez did, you know, he protected himself by not catching any balls. Like, he was just dropping everything. Not that I'm worried about him. He'll still be great during the season, but I don't know. We'll have to monitor that, I guess, as it goes and see if they take any extra precautions. But, I mean, he's got to get hit a little bit. It's just part of training, so.
Yeah, he's going to get hit around, but I think, you know, after CI last year, and then you realize, like, you look at that depth chart, and it's like, Hernandez, Dez Parks. Like, you have to take care of Hernandez. And it doesn't help that CI is now throwing that thing twice. Like, this all has to weigh in his mind somehow.
I think they'd appreciate it if, like, Brandon Spice didn't put him on his back, like, rushing the passer while he's blocking. But, I mean, I do think he'll get hit a little bit because you have to. You have to kind of play at full speed in order to prepare.
All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about the top 10 burning questions for 2009-2010, a list that we wrapped up in the last paper of the summer semester here. The second question was, can Tim Tebow repeat or, you know, win another Heisman Trophy? And the number one question, not really that much of a surprise, is can the football team repeat? And part of that is, you know, can they go undefeated? Can they do these things that they talked about doing? So to recap the list real quick, number 10 was about the women's basketball team and whether or not Coach Amanda Butler can push them over the edge. Number 9 was will the UF football team's issues off the field persist? And I have a revelation for that, by the way. I was the idiot who voted that too high. I know you guys talked about this in Hoover. I was the idiot who voted too high. I can defend myself in two ways. First of all, it was late when I sent in my list. This is not defending myself in any solid way. But the other thing is that I feel like it's not fair to say, like, you know, it's not an issue because other teams have arrested players too. Because it's like, you know, when a Florida player, like when an FSU player gets arrested and Florida fans, like, delight themselves, you know, like, Florida fans love Preston Parker's demise or whatever.
Sure.
But it's like, it's the same way for, like, you know, for FSU fans or the rest of the country with Florida. But I had to defend myself since I wasn't there to defend the person attacked.
Okay,
Uber.
I have a couple things on that.
Okay.
Are we just stating what are the biggest storylines or what to us are the biggest storylines?
I think is how I saw it.
All right, because, I mean, I was voting on my opinion, so it's like, it's not like a mob mentality thing. Like I think I actually said this on the podcast, like, I wouldn't vote the Brett Favre thing as, like, something to watch for this NFL season just because it's on SportsCenter every day because I think it's a non-factor. Like, even if he plays, he's going to be horrible. It's not going to affect the NFL season except for all the coverage. So that's kind of how I looked at it. How high is too high, though? I'm also curious.
Like six.
It couldn't have been just you, then.
Okay.
I'm sure you're happy to hear that.
Literally.
Because, think about it. All me, Defer, and McCall left it off completely. One sixth place vote, I don't think, is enough to put that on the list.
Right, to get it at nine, even?
This does quiet my conspiracy talk a little bit.
There was no conspiracy. It was an active...
I defended you guys. So I didn't think that you guys were going
to
conspire.
No, we wouldn't do that. I might do something, you know, I don't entirely agree with, even after I did it. Like, to me, I feel like nine is probably where I should have.
I don't know. We got a bunch of Steve Spurriers on staff. Like, your SIDs are filling out your ballots for you.
I
put Kalathis on his top athlete ballot. What are we even doing here? Can we take this seriously?
People die from Bobby Kalathis.
Nick Saban would be disgusted.
I just wanted to clear the air. I didn't want the mystery to go on any further, and I feel like we need to share it with the listeners as well. I couldn't live with that shame on my back as being the mystery man who put that too high on his ballot.
In case you get found out later. I wanted to be the one to tell the listeners.
I didn't want it to come out through fail revealing secretly. He revealed our secret ballots. Anyway, moving on from that, the number eight was about how will women's lacrosse be accepted at UF, and news of which Deeper just dropped on us that they have the number one recruiting class.
Yeah, oddly enough, they do. They have the number one recruiting class in college lacrosse, which is crazy since they've never played a game.
So it's safe to say women's college lacrosse is a joke.
No.
It has to be safe to say that.
In the sense that...
A team that's never played a game before has the number one recruiting class.
No, but there's legitimate women's college lacrosse.
I'd argue that when you're bringing in an entire team, it's a lot easier to have, like, a lot of highly rated prospects.
You can tell, you can go tell all, like, the top whatever prospects, like, come here and you'll start from day one, like, off the bat.
Really? But think about all the other sports you could do that in. When USF makes the jump to, like, D1, it's not like, all right, or when FAU gets a football team, it's not like, come on in,
right,
like, we're going to start you right away.
Women's
and all the top prospects,
like,
you could play at any... If you're that good of a prospect where you're getting the number one recruiting class, you can start on any team you want in the nation, even one with a history, preferably.
It happened, okay? I mean, I'm going to tell you. It happened. Women's lacrosse is not a joke. I grew up playing lacrosse.
I'm not saying the game itself is a joke. The state of the collegiate, I don't know what you want to call it, league association,
right.
Clearly not in, like, top
shape.
I'll say
that women's lacrosse is completely different than men's lacrosse. And, like, the amount of, like, fanfare and, like, whatever is on a different level. I think men's lacrosse is much further along.
The point I'm trying to make, though, in terms of it being, like, a highly rated recruiting class is that, like, I don't know how they rate them. Like, if you go by number of top recruits brought in, like,
I don't know,
you could bring in a bunch of four, you know, the equivalent of what would be four stars or whatever, and, like, you know.
Would that propel you to number one? So we have to do further research into this?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. Like, who
I'm startled. I'm startled that a team that's never played a game can get the number one recruiting class.
Yeah, it's a little strange.
Yeah.
Mysterious, one might even say.
Needless to say, go check out the women's lacrosse team. Lacrosse is cool. It'll be fun, I'm sure. It's an exciting...
Facility's nice.
It's an exciting game to watch. So go out and try it out.
Women's lacrosse is exciting?
Not as exciting as men's lacrosse, but, I mean, it's exciting. It's if you like women's soccer, I mean, it's kind of comparable to that.
Not the best part to go with that.
Men's lacrosse is very exciting, and I'll defend that every day. Women's lacrosse is also, it's different, but it's also exciting.
If you're interested in potentially opening the gateway for a men's lacrosse team at UF, support women's lacrosse.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, there's your compelling argument for women's lacrosse. Number seven was about the softball team, whether or not they can make it back to the Women's College World Series. Number six was about the Florida defense and whether or not they can rank among the best ever historically. Number five was something we talked about even here on this podcast, replacing Percy Harvin, how will they go about doing that. Number four is about the baseball team and, you know, whether they'll finally make it over the edge for the College World Series. Kind of wanted to get your thought on that since I don't think you were on the podcast when we talked about that. You covered the team. Have you gone on the record for making a prediction for them?
For next year?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's way too early. They have the potential to be better than they were this year. Anything's in play. It's baseball. This isn't the same thing. It's a completely different animal. It's way harder to predict in the future or on a day-to-day basis. So they have a good squad. They're not going anywhere as far as – they're not taking a step back. They didn't graduate all their talent. The rotation should definitely be better. The pitching should be better, and that's why I think they're going to have a good chance to improve on last year's success. You just don't know what you're going to get. I mean, a couple injuries here and there can really – screw you over, but they're gonna be a good program. They should be in the Sweet 16 or whatever with a chance to make it to Omaha.
I was surprised at how many people left. Like, I feel like we weren't expecting as many people, as many players who left to end up going pro.
Namely, Mike Mooney. And
I've been on the record many times saying, expressing my shock over Mike Mooney signing professional.
Yeah, I don't understand how that happened. The SID, John Hines, was telling, were you there for this too?
No. Okay. First of all, explain the Mike Mooney thing.
We'll get back to that. John Hines was telling me and Bobby how, like, they're going to lose some guys to the draft, like, at some point before the draft happened. And I remember going to Bob, like, John's ridiculous. Like, they're not losing anyone. There's, like, two players that can play Major League Baseball on this roster right now. And they lost as many guys as John said they would. They lost 5-6 guys, yeah, whatever it was. And a couple of them pretty surprising to me. How Billy Bullock is a round two pick is, I have no idea how that happens. Don't expect to see him on a major league team anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just really weird, but whatever. Yeah, good for them. Good for all those guys. You know, they got good contracts. Hopefully they do well and stay injury free. But I don't know. I was very surprised. Mike Mooney. I don't know. He's.
Well, where did he go? Where did he go?
When I went
home. What round?
Like the 20th-ish, maybe.
20th.
Somewhere in that neighborhood,
yeah.
But.
In the 20s, yeah.
When I went home for summer, I played a little poker with some of my friends who, you know, played baseball in high school and stuff. And, you know, they know kids from around our area. One of them played with Mooney a lot. And he said he was absolutely shocked. He was just, like, saying how the kid, like, can't hit at all. And is, like, surprised that a major league team would draft him that high. He said his brother, who actually plays at Palm Beach Community College right now, is supposed to be way better than him. But he did say that Mooney's, like, the greatest defensive shortstop he's ever seen, so, which is how he was touted coming in, and he didn't show it, like, he didn't show it at US.
Certainly not.
But supposedly the kid's a great defensive shortstop, and, I mean, if you're solid defensively and up the middle in those positions, then you got a chance to play baseball, or you're a left-handed reliever, like Tony Davis, so...
All right, and going back to the list, number 3 was about the men's basketball team, whether or not they can finally make it back to the NCAA tournament. Something that when we ran that article we didn't have a whole lot of information about was the potential of an Israeli guard named Nimrod Tishman joining the team. He's already he's enrolled at UF. He's going through the NCAA clearinghouse right now. There's a very solid chance, I'd say almost 100% of him playing next year. So that could be certainly an interesting addition. They'll actually have another guard.
Is he good?
I mean,
Does anyone know what to expect from this kid?
I'm told that he's much like Nick Kalaifu.
Yeah.
He's only not quite as fast.
It's because he's a 6'6 guard. Like, he's a 6'6 point guard, basically.
But he did average, what, 2 assists a game?
He averages, like 2.9 assists a game and, like, 18 points in his Israeli league.
So he's a scorer.
He's a scoring point guard. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting as well. I mean, I don't know. I'm not convinced he exists. Like, that's how weird this all is to me. He just, like, shows up and has a scholarship.
He was reprieved,
like, all of a sudden,
from the Israeli military, so...
Yeah, you have to serve 3 years, I think, in the IDF, the Defense Force, or whatever, over there. And he's... I guess you can put that off if you're enrolled in an American college or just in a college in general.
You guys know way too much about this.
I'm Rod Fishman. Remember the name.
Yeah, apparently. The Israeli league, by the way, not horrible. Like, it's not a bad league, really. It's probably maybe, you know, a top 5 overseas league.
Yeah. Anthony Parker is
on the bottom end of that top 5.
Came out of the Israeli league, didn't he?
What's that?
Anthony Parker.
Yeah, yeah. Anthony Parker played for... Maccabi Tel Aviv or whatever that team is.
Nice.
So, and he was considered, like, the best player not in the NBA wall over there. So, I mean, they have some teams, they have some talent, have some organizations that'll spend some money on good players. So, who knows? I mean, the competition wasn't a complete disaster over there. So
averaging 18 points or whatever he did was not, like, it's not a joke.
It's better than high school competition for sure.
No.
I'd say it's probably no better than college. Probably, maybe like a low major, mid major cut level of competition, though, I'd say.
All right. I approve of the move either way because they literally had one point guard on the roster before, and it was Irving Walker.
Yeah, I feel like Irv can't hold it down.
They'll just force him out later if he doesn't end up working out. So, so it's a win win.
He'll begin his military career sooner than planned. All right, let's move on to the end of the list, the ones we haven't talked about.
So most kids get pushed to another university. He's gonna get pushed right into battle
on the front line. That's horrible.
Let's go back to the rest of the list, the ones we haven't talked about yet. What do we think of Tebow's chances of winning another Heisman?
Great.
Okay, I'm going to let the Dallas test.
All right. Tebow, Bradford, and McCoy are the obvious front runners. Uh-huh. I mean, I think any one of them, depending on who has the best season, can end up with it.
That's generally how the house works, yeah.
Okay, but I mean, Tebow wins it. I think we can all agree that he's like the best college player of all time. Yeah. I think there's some other guys out there maybe.
I think you could not win it and still go down as the greatest college player of all time if they still win the title. So,
do you think he has to do one of the two, though, to win the to go down with that?
Yeah. I'm going to say yeah.
The title being more important.
That notch on your belt. But, what's alarming to me is that he had the most first-place votes last year and came in third. That means people, I know everyone knows this, but people are leaving him off of the ballot. Like, what's going on? Too many people have a vote. If Tim Tebow was getting left off your ballot, you shouldn't be voting. Like, I don't care if you had him first or I thought last year was a really close year. I thought he should have been no lower than second on people's ballots, but I think I would have voted for Bradford last year. But the kid can't be off your ballot. Like, what the heck? What are you doing? Who are you voting for? Who's on your ballot?
Tebow backlash, then?
I think probably a little bit of it was. I don't know. Like, were they voting for Harrell? Like, do you think, like,
yeah,
the South voters?
It's also regional.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like a regional pride supremacy thing. Like, I think
when you
insane.
Have three Big 12 quarterbacks in there, which you had with, Bradford McCoy and Graham Harrell, like, that probably got a lot of undeserved votes, especially for Harrell. How I view it.
Yeah, I don't understand it, but his chances are pretty good this year, especially because you could kind of make the argument last year that they didn't want to give it to him because they don't want him to have two, because it's like, super elite.
Yeah.
Archie Griffin's the only one who's ever done it. But now, in all likelihood, there's going to be two guys up there who already have one, and unless McCoy has a great year, it may have to go to one of the two of them. And I see this team being record-setting a lot of times. Undefeated team success will get you that trophy, so...
Yeah. I could see it going to McCoy, just in terms of not wanting to give another.
It's his turn.
Yeah, McCall has the Oscar view on this. Like, it's just his turn. Like,
yeah,
it's his time.
That's certainly within reason. Another thing that could affect Tebow, I don't know if this could affect the other guys just as much, is not playing so much, and especially in the second halves. Because if we're figuring this team is going to just whoop up on teams, Tebow's not going to be necessary, and he's not going to have to be as good throughout the entire four quarters.
I agree with that. I mean, it's not a Sam Bradford scenario where Stoops just leaves them out there the whole game and they score 75 points on people. So, I mean, I think he's shown that he can put up the numbers without going out there much, but he's never going to be what he was in 2007 statistically because he was literally competing for wins by himself. Like, it was like, I need to score 7 touchdowns this game, we're going to lose. And he would. He would score 7 touchdowns. But now it's a scenario where I can drop 3 touchdowns in, let the defense score one, special teams will pick one up, we'll be shutting them out, I can go get some water while Brantley, the 4th best quarterback in the SEC, comes in and throws some balls for me instead. So, I mean, he's never going to be the same statistically.
Yeah.
All right, we talked about this earlier today when we were working on a story for the paper, but who do you guys is dark horse, maybe people a little off the radar for the Heisman?
I mean, we talked about Jevon Snead to the point so much where I don't think he is a dark horse, but that's who I think will be that 4th guy.
He's dark horsey. I mean, you got your 3 favorites,
yeah.
So I think anyone out of there constitutes somewhat of a dark horse.
Okay.
But I'm going to say no other quarterback should be considered a dark horse because I just feel like it's easy to compare guys who play the same position against each other, and I really believe one of those 3, Bradford, McCoy, and Tebow, will be the best quarterback, and everyone will see that. So you're not going to get another quarterback voted.
Okay.
Also, because they're on the best teams, too. Like, it's not like you're going to have a guy on a 13-0 team that's going to have worse stats that's going to get in there. So I'm going to go with a couple running backs that I like. Jonathan Dwyer from Georgia Tech. Since Paul Johnson got there, they run that option offense that he's going to rush for 1 million yards in. He rushed for a ton of yards last year. In that system, I think he's the leading returning rusher. There are guys who had more yards than them if they graduated in college football, or in Division I anyway. I'm not 100% sure. He's near the top. And my other guy is Jacquizz Rodgers, who you all saw at Oregon State when they beat USC. He had a huge game for them. He's a little guy, but he's going to put up some big stats. So those are the two guys I like.
It's a huge heart, man. But I haven't talked about this on the air, but I'm a huge Oklahoma State guy this year. I think there's a scenario where they could win the Big 12. I don't think it's that ridiculous. I think Zach Robinson's the 3rd best quarterback in the Big 12 this year. He's the new Graham Harrell. I think he'll put up big
numbers. Which is a ringing endorsement for Heisman.
Third best.
In the offense he plays in, he's going to put up big numbers. He runs the spread, kind of like a Harrell-esque spread offense. He's got Dez Bryant to throw the ball to. I think it's another fringy Heisman candidate just because he's got, like, freakish athletic ability. He'll have some big catches, some highlights stuff. So I think those two guys.
I agree more with the Dez Bryant pick just because, like I said, he plays a different position, so you may have to measure up Dez Bryant's 20 receiving touchdowns against, you know, 35 to 40 passing touchdowns for one of the quarterback guys.
Who's the other guy we put in the paper at? Was Best? Was he there?
I don't think we put him in because he was deemed not dark horsey enough. But, yeah, Javid, you know Javid Best from Cal. He's also a small, undersized running back. May or may not make it in the NFL. But,
little guy, big numbers.
Yeah, little guy, big numbers from the Pac-10, much like Jacquizz Rodgers. Yeah.
He's on, like, the Devin Snead, like, super fringe, like, right. The outside of the big three. So.
You wouldn't be surprised if he makes it, but he is. He has to be considered a dark horse.
He's fighting for a trip to New York. Like him going to New York as well within the realm of possibility.
That was my question, is do they invite anybody else to New York? If it's those three guys, Tebow, Bradford, McCoy, put up good seasons, do they bother inviting the other guys?
I think they invite at least a fourth just for diversity, just so it's not the same exact people as last year.
Because
they can invite as many people as they want.
Yeah, but they don't if it's not close.
Yeah.
We saw that last year because I don't know. How do you guys feel about this? I have very mixed feelings on this because on the one hand, it's like, just let Harold go. Give him some free meals. Let him get some media attention here and that at least. But then on the other hand, it's like, do you really want him embarrassed when they reveal the vote? It's like,
yeah.
And Graham Harrell with 1.2% of the vote. Like, you know, like, I don't know if you want to do that to him, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, it'd be nice for him. And, you know, he had a good enough year to warrant the trip, like, if you want to base it on that. But he obviously didn't have a good enough year for the voters to justify him, like, going on the trip.
I don't know. I think you give him the trip anyway. Like, even if you know the vote's not going to be close, because he's not going to remember how close the vote was. He knows he's coming in fourth, but it's just, like, an honor to go. And, you know.
Just happy to be there.
Yeah, just happy to be there.
This whole show is coming back to that quote, by the way.
I see both sides of that one, so I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing another couple guys go.
I'm going to play the economy card. These are troubled economic times. Do you want to send somebody else to New York?
If it's on Nissan's
dime. It's one of my tax dollars, so sure.
All right, let's move on to the number one, Todd, the burning question on that list. Can Florida repeat? Obviously, this is a huge topic that we'll be talking about for the entire season to come, obviously, but let's just get, you know, a quick round on what do we think Florida's chances are of repeating and going undefeated.
Well, they obviously can. I think they will. I think pretty much anything less than getting to the national title game is somewhat of a choke for this team, just because of how good they are. This is the best team Florida's ever had, offensively, defensively. Now, there's not any one team out there that's better than them on either side of the ball, so I think if they do lose a game, it's a huge upset. I can't see it happening.
It's not a choke. It's not somewhat of a choke. It is a choke if they don't get to the national championship game. And they could have a really good season and not do that. If they, like, run the table to the SEC championship, pick up a loss, and then don't make it, then it's, like, not, you know, it's still, you can't really say it's a horrible season, but that's a choke for them. I think they're definitely supposed to win this one. They're huge favorites across the country. And for me, the bigger question, which I was kind of upset that we combined this into one, is will they go undefeated? Because that's something that's never been done, and that's something that's a lot harder to do than just win a national championship. Obviously, they've won three, and they've never gone undefeated. So to me, the bigger of the storylines was going undefeated, but I understand why we combined them.
Yeah. In terms of going undefeated, I think their schedule obviously plays a huge factor in making that a much easier goal to accomplish this year than it has been for them in the past. I know, Kyle, you've said a lot of times their schedule, like, there is not really, like, what did you say the toughest game for them was? FSU?
I think it's FSU. I mean, you get FSU at home, so that helps you a little bit, but they've lost at home a couple times since I've been in school, and I don't think it's impossible for them to do it again because I think FSU is a pretty good team. I know a lot of people think it's an LSU game on the road, but I watch them play, as a fan, I watch them play a totally, like, 100 times better LSU team in LSU when they were crappy, when they were giving up 25 points a game on their defense, and they almost beat them in that game. So I just feel like UF's 1,000 times better and LSU's, you know, half as good as they were, and I just don't see that being a problem game for them.
I think the toughest game for them is the one they don't expect necessarily.
Right.
It's like they'll get geared
they'll
up,
get up for that.
Yeah. Whereas FSU, it's going to be senior day, you know. Grown men will be weeping openly because it's Tebow's senior day. Like, emotions will run wild. They're
a
few, like,
photographers, maybe.
Perhaps. Not to name names. Deeper, what do you think is their toughest game?
I mean, I think whoever they play in the SEC title games, their toughest game.
Well,
Ole Miss or Bama. But I think even at that, there's no one that's really all that close to them. I think they win both those games easily. I think Florida State's kind of tricky just because I think they've won like 5 or 6 in a row with Florida State, which is something that traditionally doesn't happen in that rivalry. So I think you could see a scenario where Florida State ruins their season, which would be like awesome for Florida State. But I mean, I think either Florida State, like Kyle said, or the SEC title game.
I agree with that. I think on talent alone, they're so much better than everyone else, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee you wins. We see it with USC every year. They lose to Stanford. They lose to Oregon State. They lose to teams they should not lose to. But this is different because you have a guy who is going to, you know, the best motivator for a team in college football. I believe that. And this is his goal, is to go undefeated. He wants to go undefeated. The team has talked about going undefeated. He's going to push them not to lose any game. Being the best team is not enough. It's going to be being the best team ever. That's the goal now.
And most of the reason, like, you know, the promise happened is because they didn't go undefeated because they lost that one game that broke the chance of them going undefeated, which he said then was something that they wanted to do, which reminds me of something else I wanted to talk to you guys about from practice. That first day, I believe it was, you know, you guys talked to a couple guys, Tebow and Spikes, maybe?
Spikes, Riley Cooper, Joe Hayden. There were a handful of guys.
And you guys asked them about wanting to go undefeated, and they said, obviously, as we would all expect, yes, we want to go undefeated. That, you know, that is an objective for us. That's what we're thinking about, right? Like, they weren't denying this or anything.
Well, they're trying to win the SEC title. But
well, that was the second day's response they were tongue-lashed, presumably, by the coaching staff. But no, originally they were like, yeah, we want to go undefeated. That's a goal. They were very open about the fact that that was a goal for them. And that's good. If I'm Urban Meyer, I like that. Like, big deal. Your guys want to win every game. Oh, no. Like, holy crap. But, like, I think Joe Goodman, the Herald writer in his blog, had something like, newsflash, every team wants to win every game. Like, what's the big deal here? And it's right for them to say that that's the goal. This one week at a time crap is not going to cut it. Like, no one is going to pretend they're concerned about Charleston or Troy or FIU, you know? I mean, like, some of these games, it's not about the individual games. It's about stringing together a great season.
That's what's always struck me as so bizarre about the, like, coaches telling the team not to talk about that. It's like, you don't want your players to win every game. You're not interested in that right now. You're not worried about your team entering the season with the desire to win every game. But then, as Deeper hinted at or said, the second day, everything was much more, like, you got Meyer finally talked, and he was, you know, he was saying that it was all about winning the SEC championship and all that stuff. What was he talking about?
Yeah, we're just happy to be here. But, yeah, I mean, Urban is... His whole thing is that in order to win the title and to go undefeated, you have to win the SEC title and win the SEC games, and it all plays into that. It's kind of like, this is the Urban Meyer line of thinking, and we all need to think like that. If not, like, that's no good.
It's a lot like the UF line of thinking I think we've seen. I know even in the smaller sports, like, you get a little bit of like, well, Florida's goal was always to win the SEC title and then, you know, to win a national title.
Except for our boy Tim Walton. But I've always respected him for this because he didn't mess around, he didn't lie to me. He just said, our goal is to get to the College World Series. If we accomplish that, we will have won the SEC along the way. And that's what he always said, and it's 100% true, and I'm glad that that's always the stance that he took is a little refreshing.
He thought so logically. It was like, it's unheard of for us to hear something like that.
And then you have to constantly readjust your goals. It's like, are they supposed to be happy after they win the SEC? I don't think they are.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you give yourself a little pat on the back, but that's not the goal. Who cares if they win, if they get... And they're not even saying our goal is to win the SEC championship. Our goal is to get to Atlanta.
Get to Atlanta.
But, like, can't you just picture them polishing off FSU and then just going nuts, like, in the clubs that night? Like, people are, like, going crazy. They don't even bother showing up for the SEC championship game. They're the Rays all of a sudden. All the fans are just like, oh, whatever happens. We've already got to Atlanta. None of this is going to happen. It's ridiculous. Like, just don't insult me with that crap.
And the thing is that it's going to be spun all season. It's like, you know, the coaching staff saying, like, see, they just want to get to Atlanta, whatever. We have heard from the players that they want to go undefeated, that they want to win the national title. Like, you can't undo what they said, even though they're going to try to.
They tried.
It's ridiculous. Then somebody asked Urban a question. He was, like, leading into it, and his setup was, you know, your guys have talked openly yesterday about wanting, or today, whatever day it was, about wanting to go undefeated. And then Steve McClain, the SID, like, cut him off and was like, well, because you asked them. It's like... Yeah, so what? We didn't put the words in their mouth. Like, we can ask them a question about whatever we want. Like, it was so weird. It was like, they would have never even thought about going undefeated unless you asked them that question. You just poisoned them with this crazy thought. Unbelievable. I don't know what to say anymore.
it's ridiculous because, as you know, as our wise on occasion panel voted, when I'm not messing up, we have a wise panel voted. Like, going undefeated is like a big part of this season. It is a huge storyline.
To me, it is the storyline.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but it's the storyline.
I mean, I think you can't say the team would be unhappy if they lost a game and they still won a national.
No, no, definitely.
So that to me is what I guess places it above in terms of importance. I don't know. I agree with you. I think going undefeated is the big thing this year. Because, like,
but
it's almost such a foregone conclusion.
It's kind of the thing, though. It's like, you're taking the Urban Meyer, I'm taking the Walton. Like, if they go undefeated, they will have won a national title.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, like,
but my thing is that they can still, it can still happen either way.
Right.
So, we agree on this, actually.
Yes.
It's just I'm providing an alternative point of view, I guess
right.
you could say. All right, let's move on here to our final segment. We're going to give out our weekly awards, the Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. Go to one good thing and one bad thing we saw in the last week or so of sports. I'll lead off with my Kyle Jackson. It's going to go to Jordan Reed for the audio clip that you heard earlier on in the show and the UF coaches who persuaded him to say as much as we talked about at length. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. Deeper, go ahead and give out your Kyle.
My Kyle Jackson Bag Angle of the Week is a dual award going to both Urban Meyer and our own Phil Kegler. First, Urban Meyer gets it for scheduling the first session of 2 days at 6 a.m. And then Phil Kegler gets it for, after agreeing to stay up all night with me and Kyle, falling asleep halfway through in the fetal position on Kyle's couch.
You make that sound so sketchy. Like, he agrees to stay up all night with us, then he fell asleep halfway. I don't know. Well, you guys made this deal because practice is so ridiculous.
It was so ridiculous when we were up so late. We decided it was better just to stay up than go to sleep and try to wake up so early.
I stand by that decision. I caught a nap in between the two practices and then went back out for the second one.
For me, it ended up being a horrible decision. I had to move that day.
Ooh.
And it was agonizing. I didn't sleep for like 3 days, but...
Ooh.
Wow. It is what it
Maybe
is.
Maybe a small exaggeration, but you were running on very low sleep.
Well, you got soldiered through it, and you made it while your own.
Of course,
Phil Kegler was.
Of course,
we did. All right, Kyle, you're Kyle.
All right, my Kyle Jackson is going to go to. I have nothing Gator related this week, by the way. There's just not enough going on. So I watched the Yankees Red Sox game. Bad idea because I hate both teams, and only terrible things can come of that. But ESPN pushes it on me, and you know, Red Sox go ahead 2-1, come out of the eighth inning. And Josh Bard, the phenom, gives up a solo home run to Johnny Damon to tie the game up. You know, no big deal, whatever. Damon then proceeds to take a curtain call for tying the game up in the eighth inning with a solo home run. It's probably his first hit of the day. And then Teixeira comes up, hits another solo home run to give him a 3-2 lead. He circles the bases and takes another curtain call. I've been around baseball a very long time. I played it for a long time. I've watched an absurd, way too much baseball. I have never seen anything like this, and I hope they both get hit with fastballs next time they play the Red Sox, because it's just unbelievable. The Teixeira one, I wouldn't have had such a problem with if Damon didn't just take one right before him. The whole thing was just ridiculous. Like, turning it into a circus. Like, be a little professional, please. Don't take a curtain call on your first hit of the night that ties the game up.
I'm sure somebody got a pie in the face afterwards. Is there a thing?
It was a big joke. And then two of my Yankee fan friends just completely told me how crazy I was. One compared it to saying that, like, somehow I got compared to Ron Artest going into the stands, and that I was saying it was that bad, and that Ron Artest, I'm saying that, but by saying that they should be beamed the next time they come up, then I would think that Ron Artest should have been shot, like on the scale of, like, punishment.
Huh.
I don't know. None of it made any sense.
Really?
Yeah, these are my friends.
Good point. All right, we're ending on a happy note for this show, and I'll give out my Reggie Nelson Award. It's actually one I just came up with when, Deeper, you were talking about the early practice. You mind a USC, Southern Cal football. Their practices are open to the fans and media for 2 weeks, open to everybody straight through, up until, like, they get to, like, when school starts or whatever. And the earliest they start, 9 a.m.
So Pete Carroll is getting it right again.
Pete Carroll is, like, an enlightened man.
He's out there surfing on the beach every morning. It's
he's on Twitter.
Goodbye. Yeah, he's on Twitter.
He's actually on Twitter, giving, like, real stuff. Like,
surprisingly unconcerned with the security of his extremely dirty program.
That's the thing that was so funny. I was like, wouldn't, like, I sent an email to Phil, actually, I think it was. It was like, wouldn't you love, like, if we went to USC and we covered this? And I was like, there's two great things about that. First of all, you could cover practice open for 2 weeks, you know, not waking up at 6 a.m. And also, you get to break a bunch of stories about a dirty program. Like,
really couldn't get much better from a college journalism perspective.
Right.
But Pete Carroll's reasoning behind it was like, you know, why let a bunch of people in? Like I said, he's an enlightened man. He was like, our players play in front of a lot of people. They should have to practice in front of a lot of people.
Nice.
He's a brilliant man.
God bless Pete Carroll.
Yeah, that's
God
why USC football and Pete Carroll get the Reggie Nelson.
I wish we covered Pete Carroll.
Yeah, he's a great man.
Maybe we will someday.
Yeah. All right, Deaver, give out your Reggie.
My Reggie Nelson goes to Nimrod Tishman, the Florida basketball program. coming over here for the very thin guard. Urban Walker's on holding down the fort. So hopefully Nimrod can show us what he can do. Good luck, Nimrod.
You really feel confident. You really have to feel confident in Nimrod after that.
I mean, he's getting a big opportunity. He's going to college, dodging the military service for a while. I want to say dodging. He's not dodging. He's putting off.
Oh, you said it. Yeah. It's already out there.
I don't want to
take
it
back. It's on tape.
Digital tape. Yeah.
Someone's going to... Jordan Reed's going to play that back on his podcast.
If Jordan Reed does a podcast, we should all go on it.
I don't think he'd have us after what we had to say.
Jordan Reed would say that that's his entire podcast. Just him saying he's happy to be here. He's happy to be recording.
All on the press mix on YouTube. This is Jordan Reed. Like play to the background of a beat, and like Jordan Reed just saying, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, that'd
times.
Be great.
That would be great. Get on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll do what I can.
All right. So anyway, my Reggie Nelson is going to go to the UFC as an organization. I ordered 101 with a couple friends. A couple mean 15, I don't know. But a couple friends, and, you know, had a good night watching the fights. Everybody I wanted to win lost. But it was still just a good night. It seems like every one of these events are really entertaining. I like how the leagues run. I like, you know, it's really exciting, and it's something new that I'm, like, really getting into, and I'd urge everybody else to at least give a shot. So, UFC, good job.
Were you a boxing guy?
No. I mean, I was, like, I kind of like boxing. It's a little slow for me, though. I feel like the UFC is a lot more interesting. There's more going on at all times, so I prefer that.
All right, and I guess that about wraps it up for today's show. Check us out on iTunes. I'd recommend that you subscribe to us there. Leave us a little reader feedback, user feedback, whatever it's called. To my knowledge, we're still not in the top 100. I feel like Men's College Gymnastics Weekly made a reprise in the top 100, which hurt me to my very soul. So I'd ask that you go on, subscribe to us, leave us some feedback, reviews, whatever, whatever you can do. Also, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/alligatorsports. Kyle's updating. Kyle's tweeting all the time.
Yeah.
So sure. All right.
I think I might bring back the haikus.
Oh,
so
yeah. Those
can look
died, unfortunately. Those lived too short of a life. The Twitter haikus from Kyle.
I didn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
I don't know where the Twitter haiku.
We'll get you on those in the fall.
Yeah.
Once football season rolls around. But check back. We might have another podcast coming this week. If not, I'm sure we'll be back next week with some more stuff from practice and leading up to the regular season. So thanks for listening.